All right, Richard, here's what we're gonna do.
We need a voice exemplar.
I want you to say into this phone, there's a bomb in Centennial Park. You have 30 minutes.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon, sponsored by Circle and SwagRight.com. I'm Victor Mattis, along with Sonny Bunch and Jonathan V. Last. Just a reminder, the Subbeacon is available on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Look at our podcast and search for Subbeacon. You'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and leave a review. Gentlemen, how are we? Sonny Bunch.
Hi.
Congratulations. Now we can talk about...
Congratulations to you. I'm glad you didn't die last night.
We'll get to
the free Beacon party.
We'll get to that at the end of our dudes chatting.
All right.
You first. Congratulations on Rebeller.com.
Rebellermedia.com.
Sorry. Rebellermedia.com.
Twitter handle is just Rebeller.
Tell us about it.
So I have in secret been putting together a website called Rebellermedia.com that is a basically like a film site, you know, like a RogerEbert.com or something of that ilk. The top part of the site is an aggregator, like a Drudge style aggregator. You click on the link and it sends you off the site to the people who originally wrote it. We're not paying people to sit around and rewrite the same thing over and over again to harvest Google ad clicks. We're just sending people to the sites because that's all you really want. That's all you care about. And we have a section of original stories, people writing, you know, essays, first person pieces, that sort of thing. I'm hoping to have 2 to 3 a day. We have enough lined up through about the first week of January, and I'm taking more on as we go, and we have a podcast network. There's a new show that I'm working on called Across the Movie Aisle with my friends Alyssa and Peter. Alyssa Rosenberg of the Washington Post, Peter Suderman of Reason. It's not on Apple yet. It should be on Apple like today or tomorrow. We submitted it to Apple the day the site went live because we didn't want to spoil the news of Rebeller. So it's a bit backed up. And the one catch about this site is that you do have to pay for the original content.
Paying for content.
It's a weird model in this crazy upside down world of ours.
Give a little bit or nothing.
If you sign up, you can sign
just
up
the tip.
Yeah, sign up for a membership and you can get just the tip. You can get three free original stories a month. And you just got to sign up for a Cinestate account with Shopify. Basically, Cinestate is the company I work for. Technically, it's the parent company. Once you sign up for that account, you can get a free membership that's just three stories a month. But paying for a full membership,
it's got to be what, $300 a year, $400 a year,
$500 a year. No, it's a
$1,500 lifetime.
$2 per month.
Where do these numbers come from?
$2 per month, or $20 per year. It's incredibly affordable.
A whole year for $20.
$20 for one whole year.
But you don't have any good writers, right?
It's
not like you have Matt Labash writing for the site.
We don't have the great Matt Labash. Oh, wait, we do have the great Matt Labash.
Uh-oh.
The great Matt Labash on day one,
so
writing about Marvel vs. Marty.
Matt Labash for $20 a year? Sign me the F up.
If I could get Matt Labash every week, you know, for $20 a year, we'd probably have to charge more than that, you know. But we'll have the occasional
like getting
Labash,
Joe Mitchell
hopefully.
To write for the New Yorker.
We've got a bunch of good stuff. The guy who edited Fred
nothing
Raskin,
is $20 a year anymore.
Nothing is $20. I mean, it's funny. So I have been signing up for a lot of different subscriptions because I've been reading a lot more and like. Everyone is starting to charge for content finally. Everyone is finally starting to charge for
good.
Content.
I'm
again.
Glad we had to kill all media to get to the point
really,
where
we realized that this was the old model is best. And everything is incredibly expensive. You know, New York Magazine, which I like a lot. I read Vulture every day. I link to it a lot on the aggregator side of things, is like $80 a year. Now, Vulture Magazine puts out a lot of stuff. It's like it's pretty good product, but it's incredibly expensive. Everything is just incredibly expensive. We are incredibly cheap, and we're even cheaper if you use the promo code SUBBEACON. Two words.
What?
All uppercase SUBBEACON. SUBBEACON listeners, some of whom have already signed up, are our most dedicated fans. I have to give a very special shout out to the SUBBEACON Expanded Universe, who have done just a tremendous job of driving people to the Twitter handle and to the website and signing people up. I'm humbled and deeply filled with gratitude. But
so much so that you're converting to Catholicism.
Well, let's not. I mean, it's baby steps. I think I got it. Don't I have to do like evangelical first and then Catholicism?
No.
Isn't it like a ladder?
No,
like
a ladder. You could skip.
But
what do you get off for Subbeacon code?
For these, if you use
at rebellermedia.com.
Two words, Subbeacon in the promo code. When you sign up at rebellermedia.com, you get 15% off. So that's an extra.
Fantastic.
So it's like an extra. It's like $17
a
month.
$17 a year.
$17 a year. $17 a year for the whole thing. Access to the whole thing. It's great. So that's incredibly cheap. I guess it would be what, a dollar. I can't do math. Be a dollar.
It's cheap.
70 per month.
Don't do math on air.
But I'm a journalist.
Wait, what's the website again? It's
rebellermedia.com. So rebeller.com is owned by some Estonian firm that wanted like $150,000.
You know what? I gave money to rebeller.com.
No. Oh, no. You're going to be getting some weird credit alerts.
Rebellermedia.com. Promo code again. What is that promo code, Sonny?
It's Subbeacon. Two words. All uppercase. Subbeacon.
Subbeacon for 15% off.
15% off at rebellermedia.com.
Excellent.
That website, one more time.
It's rebellermedia.com.
Playboy.com. Wait, no, I'm sorry. Rebellermedia.com. Rebellermedia.com.
Whitehouse.com.
Whitehouse.com. I'm very gratified for the number of signups we have had already. Frankly, in the first 2 days, we had about as many signups as I thought we would get in a month. And people are into it. Another great columnist for us, Joe Bob Briggs. The great Joe Bob Briggs, you may remember him from TNT's Monster Vision. He's at Shudder now.
Yes.
He's been doing a column for a long time for a number of outlets. He actually wrote for The Village Voice back in the day. He had one of the homes of his column back when Rupert Murdoch owned it.
See, a lot of great people wrote for The Village Voice.
Yeah. Are you going to have time to write for it, or is all your time going to be sucked up with editing and business side stuff?
I'm going to try to write 2 to 3 times a week. That is my hope. I have a lot of business side, social media side.
Wait, in addition to your Washington Post column?
In addition to the Washington Post column, which I am not giving up. So it's going to be, we'll see.
You're gonna have to work a lot of hours a week, aren't you?
Yeah, it's
More than 30, right? So you'll be pretty busy.
More than I have been working, certainly.
But
I will keep doing this show,
even though you'll be working insane. So hard.
Even though we are moving to Dallas in a month. So very, very exciting times. I hope everybody really likes rebellermedia.com. And
Subbeacon.
There was Subbeacon promo code. Subbeacon promo code. Two words, Subbeacon. And one of the really nice things about this launch was there was a very, very fair piece in The Ringer. I don't want to say it was like a good piece. I don't want Scott Tobias, the author, to think he was, you know, doing promo work for us.
No.
But it was very fair and a really informative and interesting piece about Rebeller. And Cinestate, our parent company, and what we're up to, including a discussion of the first Rebeller movie that's going to be coming out later in 2020, called Run, Hide, Fight. And I'll just give you the elevator pitch.
Oh, boy, yeah.
Give you the elevator pitch, then we can move on to the next thing. Die Hard in a School Shooting. So that's what Rebeller is. If you want to know what Rebeller is Run, Hide, Fight,
yeah.
Die Hard in a School Shooting, wow. RebellerMedia.com, Subbeacon promo code, 15% off. You sign up for the website, you'll get lots of updates on Die Hard and School Shooting. I can tell you that much.
Thank you, Sonny. JVL.
Add over.
That's good. No, you should be a regular sponsor.
It's more of an infomercial than an ad.
You got a lot of ad money there. Throw it our way. Yeah. JVL, what's going on with you?
Can we talk about the capitalist toilet?
Yes. Oh,
sure. Explain.
So I sent that thing to you, right?
Yes,
it's
yes.
A new development. Yeah. For toilets, which places the commode at a slight declining angle,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The purpose of which is to cause pain in anybody who is sitting on it after 3 minutes.
Well, after three? I thought it was 10.
I don't believe so. I believe it's three. Maybe it's five. But anyway, the point is it causes pain in your legs.
Yeah. If so you're not used to that, if you don't have that sort of leg muscle support, and there are some people
the muscle,
who do.
What's the muscle in the back? Not the quadricep. That's the front.
The hamstring.
Yeah, but that's not a muscle, right? That's like
the,
just a
the
tendon?
Kegel.
I don't know.
The Kegel muscle. Oh. That's what you're talking about.
Yes.
So okay, this is right. So if you there was a about 20 years ago, maybe less than that, maybe 15 years ago, you began to see a change in public space design, where all of a sudden benches were given a third hand railing, right? So,
oh,
so benches with hand railings on either side.
That's it. So you
there'll
can't
be a third hand rolling in the middle, to basically to take a 6 foot bench and segment it into 2 3-foot benches.
Is that to deter?
To deter people from lying down on them. If you look around, you see this all over DC. Any place that there is a flat, sort of waist high or thigh high space, like on a wall, it will have these little decorative iron things sticking up out of it. You think, oh, those are pretty. I wonder if they're to keep people from sitting on them, right? And the idea is this is public design as an anti-homeless person measure. Like, we don't like homeless people. They're poor, so they're bad people. And so we have to deny them even rudimentary physical comforts.
No. Oh,
once you move to San Francisco and you can just poop on the
street.
That's
nonsense.
Come on now. But
there's a difference between saying, like, okay,
problem.
You know, we need to have pity and sympathy for the homeless, and like also just acknowledging that they can be a menace.
But if you allow that sort of thinking, eventually the capitalist free market.
Now here we go.
With the meat, which controls the means of production, the overlords, the 0.001%.
All right,
they come.
All right,
and they say, "Wait a minute,
Leon Trotsky over here.
Is it a way we could do the same thing to the workers?"
No, he doesn't work there anymore. You don't have to do that anymore.
And that's what the toilet is. They're gonna put. This is not a home product. This is a product for offices to make sure that we. I'm sorry. You gotta drop the kids off at the pool when you're at the office. Don't take too much time in there. Got to get back to work. This is bad.
That would not happen in this office. I'm telling you, half my office uses that for work. They're sitting there for hours.
You guys are not outraged by this?
It's always occupied. It's interesting. But I don't. You know what though? People are sitting too long on the toilet and they get hemorrhoids as a problem. I'm just saying,
it's a public health.
I'm not saying it's me. I'm just saying I heard somebody say that.
Can I ask a slightly related question? You know how they have changed toilet design slightly so that you're like slightly higher off the ground?
Comfort height.
I hate that.
Is the term in the intro.
No, but it's not comfortable. It's the opposite of comfortable. This feels much like that. Like, I don't like that. I don't like the like higher toilets.
You pay extra for those.
I don't like them.
Yeah, those
at
are
Home
the
Depot.
Fancy ones.
Yeah.
The comfort height
ones.
And the oval, right? The oblong, the elongated bowls.
Yeah, I don't need that. Yeah. I don't need that. Yeah. I don't. If people
pressure down there.
People don't want to, you know, feel sore on the toilet. Then you get off it.
Mm-hmm.
How about that?
Sonny takes the side of the managers
or get off
and the capital
pot.
Holders. Interesting.
Right.
Can we take 30 seconds about Star Wars, or do you want to do that later?
We'll get to the box office. When we get to the box office section, even though it's not out yet, we'll get to Star Wars.
Okay.
You can talk about it now if you want.
No,
wait, I haven't seen it.
We have an episode.
We're doing an episode next week. Yeah. I have not seen it either.
I saw a Variety headline about China, and it's like its lowest opening in China.
So
people hate Star Wars. It's fascinating.
Oh, really?
I want to talk about box office projections
but
for this. So when do you want to do
this? Put Rose on the poster.
Let's do it during the box office.
Sorry, she's not.
Okay,
sorry.
We'll do that. Move that to box office. Victorino,
okay.
How are you?
I am.
You are
surviving.
Alive.
I am alive. This was
barely.
One of the hardest weeks I've had to get through. For work was a lot, and then socially, because it's the Christmas, it's the holiday season, and Santa Claus is coming to town.
What do you mean it was hard for you socially?
Well, let's see. Yesterday, I didn't get home. I was at the Free Beacon Christmas party, and that was nice.
It's a banger, as the kids say. That party is always a banger.
I was there from like...
In the mouth?
Somewhere between... I don't know. We get there. The party started at 6. I got there a little bit after, because traffic is horrendous. And then I got home at noon. Not noon. 12. Midnight. Sorry, I'm confused here. Got home at midnight. Took an Uber, and I metroed in the morning just to be safe, so I wouldn't do something stupid, and so that was good. And then let's see.
Wait, here. So what were you doing for 6 hours last night?
just drinking.
Did you have any food? Did you eat anything?
I did. They had a lot of sliders, and so I had sliders and things like that. Good. So that was good.
Can I get a tally of the drinking?
Multiple, 6 hours.
Multiple doers and sodas, and then
Multiple three, or is multiple more than 15?
No, maybe just four. I don't know. And then after that, I asked our good friend Aaron Harrison about, like, you know, how can I tell the bartender, yeah, you know, how do I break out of our package deal? Because I want to get something off menu, you know? And he goes, just point to me and say, hey, this guy says it's okay. So I did that, and that opened up.
The Louis XIV.
Who ordered that on the receipt? Somebody got that on the receipt.
Doing shots of Johnny Walker Blue.
The funny thing is, no. So you know what I got? I settled on Michter's.
Oh, Michter's is good.
That's a very good.
What is that?
That's a bourbon. So they put one ice cube in there.
Do they have the big square ice cubes?
Yeah, but not too big. Not too big that it takes up the whole thing. Yeah. Just, you know, a nice small, because, you know, don't jip me, you know? Is that the wrong word?
Can't say that.
Really? Okay.
Can't say that.
So I got that, and then I had multiple of those. And then but I had the sliders. And then we saw a lot of our friends were there, so that was very nice. And then on Monday, I was at a Christmas lunch from about 12 to 4.
That was lunch, though. So you didn't drink at all, right?
A little bit. And then on the prior to that was a Saturday, and that was a Christmas party where we saw your lovely wife.
Oh, that's right.
Sonny was there.
When I first got in, I
only remember seeing Sonny for about an hour.
Vic, I have a question.
Oh.
I have a question.
Yes.
Question. When did you decide that sleeping in the car was preferable to sleeping downstairs in one of the guest rooms?
I didn't. Well, this Wait, is what? Funny. I took myself out of. I took myself out of the game, Coach. I took myself out of the game. I had decided I would just make my own martinis. Nobody else was having them, and we, you know.
I get to the party maybe an hour after Vic got there. Is that right? Yes. Would you say that's right?
Yes. Yes. I saw you and your lovely wife.
And he is drinking martinis out of the martini pitcher.
No, not like that. I'm putting it. No, I'm mixing. It's a miniature.
You were
pitcher.
Carrying around.
I was
okay, the pitcher fine. With you,
and then I.
And
yeah,
just
and
because you're just because you're briefly pouring the pitcher into the glass,
and then the glass, and then, it was a small glass.
It
Come
was
on
a small
now.
Glass. It was, but it was very. I was like, oh, okay, so it's that kind of party, huh?
It was. It was for me, and so I was just really excited. I was in a good mood. I was really at that point ready to you know, let my hair down, as they say, and ready to party. So I was in a good mood, and Kate was driving, so I figured, you know, this is good. And then I don't know, after martini number four, excuse me, I thought, oh,
please
no.
Please don't throw up in the
Yeah,
in
and
the
there room. was polite company there. I mean, some of our friends, but also polite company. And it's a mixed crowd. Because it's a mixed crowd, they don't need to see me, or I don't need to embarrass my wife or my friends or the host and lovely hostess. So I thought, I'm just going to leave now. But I said to Kate, I need to see you. Get me the keys. And she's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, no, get me the keys. I'm just going to sit in the back of the car and just cool off, you know? And at which point, I understand. Continetti told me that at some point people were like, wait, where's Vic? Where'd he go? And then he said there was a search party.
We were concerned. We were concerned because you had disappeared.
I think the host was concerned that I was in their bedroom, passed out.
No. But we.
What?
I literally.
What? How did this end up in my head?
Literally. Literally wandered.
What?
Wandered.
Oh, sorry. I got confused. We're sorry.
Yes. Literally.
I think she
wandered,
was scared. Matt said that she was like, oh, I checked every bedroom. Like, yeah. like they were worried, like, oh my gosh, we better check the bedroom.
Had all you had was four martinis, or had you started with something else?
Nah, there was a little mixing going on there. But I don't really remember.
He was drinking them out of the pitcher.
And I chose backseat because I didn't want. I'm sure a lot of listeners are thinking, no, he doesn't have a problem. But I chose the back seat because, you know, you sit in the front and there's like the light from the house. People walk out. I saw like Kristen Soltis at KSA was there. Like, I think they might have seen me, like, you know, in the back. Like, oh, pretend we didn't see that, you know, and they just went on their way. But it was anyway, that was. But I had a lot of shrimp, too. I ate a lot of shrimp because I brought shrimp and I made the cocktail sauce.
It wasn't a Super Bowl party.
I know. I was really excited. And the cocktail sauce I made was extra special. So it's no, why is it so spicy? That ain't horseradish. I'm just having a conversation with myself now. That ain't horseradish. No, so it's ketchup and Worcestershire sauce and Tabasco, salt and pepper, chili powder, and a lemon juice. And the most important thing is the prepared horseradish, which is extremely hard to find. And so I kept on going over there thinking that nobody was eating enough of the shrimp. And I bought like 3 pounds of shrimp, right? And so I start just taking that shrimp down. And then
just housing that shrimp.
And then Kate finally checks up on me because it's freezing out there in outside, and I was like half frozen, but that's okay. I said, if I freeze to death, that's fine. And then I said, take your time. So then eventually she comes back and it's like, okay, and she has her, and she's such a saint. And she was just like, oh, I'll take you. Oh, you're gonna sit back there? Well, I guess I'm like an Uber driver, she says. So we get back, and at which point I can barely keep it all together. And we get in to the house. Of course, her parents are there because they were watching the kids. So, you know, lovely Dr. and Mrs. Dwyer are sitting down in the living room, and I just give a quick wave and go right upstairs. And she goes, oh, he's not feeling well. And then, like, you know, 2 minutes later, and then it was all the shrimp. That's why I got sick.
It was food poisoning.
It was you food, had some poisoning. Food poisoning. I'm yeah. telling you, it was so food poisoning. And I was so scared for the other people.
Poisoning to the party.
No, because I believe I was the only person who ate the shrimp. Oh. And it was
thank God.
Thank God for that.
It's like throwing yourself on a grenade.
It was. And after it was done, you know, like 3 or 4 times, like clarity. I felt so
you
much
felt
better.
So much better.
I felt so much better.
Did you have a hangover the next morning?
Not bad. I was hurting in many ways, but yeah. not like your typical
well,
hangover.
You got rid of all
I
the
got
food
rid of
poison.
All the toxins.
You got rid of all the food poison.
Yes, and I went downstairs and Kate's parents just sitting quietly, and clearly, like, they heard the entire thing. And, you know, and Dr. I was like, well, you should go rest. Why did you? I'm trying to talk, you know, like, why you should go upstairs and rest. And I'm like, oh,
hey guys, I feel so much better.
I literally
want a martini.
I literally said, I feel so much better. But that was it. And yes, you have questions?
You know, I feel like I remember a story, and I can't remember which one of you guys it was about, though. Where there was a lot of drinking, and one of you had to, like, sit down on the sidewalk in Roslyn at, like, 7 o'clock at
that
night.
That was me.
Oh, right. Okay. And then there was this another story where one of you guys went
home
and threw
up in the
bushes.
I think it was the kava. That was
your
same,
wife had to
the,
had to hose off the front steps.
That was the was same
that,
night.
Was that
that was the
Sunny?
Same night?
Oh, was you?
It was the same night.
You know what? I'm sure this is all totally
fine. There's not a pattern.
There's
no
pattern
at all.
Are you trying
to put things together here? I know you're trying to make like something going on here, but it's
as
not.
A certain
I'm
reporter from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution would say, these are just accurate facts.
Oh, that's good. I love that. We'll get to that. That's a good one too. That's the price I paid, but, you know, that's what happens when you want to take it to the next level. Speaking of which, over the weekend, Jumanji, the next level. So I had no idea what
Very
else.
Nice.
I've never seen any
it's
of
a solid
movies.
B.
I keep on thinking that this is the other movie where he deals with giant monsters and dinosaurs.
That's Land of the Lost.
Rampage.
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 Okay. Jumanji, the next level, took the top spot at the box office with $59 million, followed by Frozen 2 with $19 million, and in third place, Knives Out with $9 million, and in fourth place, Richard Jewell with 4.7. Initially, it was 5.
How'd it get that much?
Okay. Box office thoughts, and throw Star Wars in there if you like.
I mean, I don't really care at all about this box office.
Yeah, you want to talk about projections?
Definitely interested in the next one.
What are you thinking about the next one?
Force Awakens opens to $247 million. The Last Jedi opened to $220 million. Where would you boys like to set the over-under on Rise of Skywalker?
I think there's a difference between what I want it to get and what I think it's going to get. Mm.
I would. So I think Disney is officially projecting. I mean, it's by the. Disney is officially projecting $170 million or something like that. And it did $45 million or so in previews last night. We're taping this Friday.
As you all know.
Friday, December 20th. Last night's previews were $45 million or something like that. So frankly, I think 170 is a lowball figure. I would go 190. I know you think that this is going to be closer to 160.
No, I think 180. I think this does Incredibles 2.
Yeah. I think like in the 190 to 200 range.
I'll say 200.
So, okay, so that's the first question I wanted to ask. The second one is, what is the number which is is or should be panic inducing, because I think that an opening of the final movement of the Star Wars machine at Incredibles 2 levels should make people panic and set their hair on fire. Because that's
Incredibles 2,
$40 million decline from Rise of Skywalker.
Incredibles 2 was such a weird
I don't know
what debut. Actually, yeah. And that movie grossed $600 million. I don't think anybody saw that coming. That was crazy.
Okay, well, take the Incredibles 2 out of it. $180 million going from 247 to 220 to 180, I think should scare the living crap out of Disney.
The Force Awakens. I mean, look, I will play devil's advocate here and say that The Force Awakens overperformed because people were so excited to see the original cast back together again.
But that
overperformance
was mostly in the hold, not in the open.
It opened at $247 million. We're talking about the open. We're talking about the open.
Fair enough.
The bigger question is not the opening weekend, but the multiple, right?
Right, and so, Force Awakens had a giant multiple.
It had not just a giant open, it had also a giant multiple. I think it did a multiple of almost four. It grossed four times its opening weekend, basically, more or less. It was very close to that. The Last Jedi did closer to a standard multiple, right? It did something like three, I think.
I think it was a little below that.
Below that, but a standard multiple is 2.7. So like it was in that range between a 2.7 and a 3 or something like that. Here's the question. The more interesting question for me about Rise of Skywalker is, does it do a Last Jedi multiple or a Force Awakens multiple? Or does it do worse than the Last Jedi?
Worse. Mm-hmm.
Because if it is not just that like people were kind of bummed out by the Last Jedi, so they don't show up for Rise of Skywalker, but it is good enough that word of mouth is good on it, that people show up and they keep coming back for it and they keep wanting to watch it again and again. I think Disney can spin it as like, look, there was, you know, the audience was disappointed after The Last Jedi. We realize that now. That's why we let all of our people crap on The Last Jedi for the last 2 weeks of the press period. And we are course correcting. And look, the critics, you know, the critics say this is bad at 55%, but look at the audience score. The audience score is, you know, it's going to be an A on CinemaScore, I bet. And it's at 86%, you know, positive on the confirmed purchases, whatever, for Fandango. So, or the Rotten Tomatoes verified, you know, reviews. So, I mean, I think that if it has a multiple of between 3 and 4, if it opens, let's say it opens to 180, and it does a multiple of 3, that puts it at what, 540? $540 million.
That's not great.
It's not great. I mean, look,
it's not what they signed up for.
When
they bought Star Wars, they did not sign up for 540 domestic.
Here's what the problem. I mean, look, the problem is they don't have anybody running over the show over there like Kevin Feige runs the show at Marvel. Kathleen Kennedy is going to get promoted so hard after this. She's going to
deserves it.
She's going to spin right up to her own, you know, label, blah blah blah. And it's going to be great for her, and everyone's going to love what she does next. But the fact that they keep firing directors and keep rewriting and throwing together things at the last minute, I have seen The Rise of Skywalker. And all I will say about it before we talk about it on the show next week is it is a direct sequel to The Force Awakens. It is a direct sequel to The Force Awakens. And the reason for this is because they had no game plan. They had no map for the series. Rian Johnson burned the thing down in the second one.
So are they acting like the second one didn't happen?
I would again, we can talk about this more next week. I would say that outside of one or two scenes, you could play this as a direct sequel to to the first one, Force Awakens.
It's like J.J. Abrams just, you know, taking a break and coming back and saying, anyway, as I was saying, and then continuing.
Yeah, more
the
or
story.
Less. That's almost exactly what happened.
So here's my anecdote and what freaked me out. I went to see Richard Jewell last night, which was opening night. My show was at 4 p.m. The first Star Wars screening was at 5 p.m. My Suburban Multiplex. All right. You know, it had all of the you know, the things they, the, what are the snake lines, right, that they
the
put outside,
line.
The rope lines to get people ready to go in. 1 hour before the first showtime for the final installment of the Skywalker saga. Every generation has its heroes. There were five nerds standing in line.
Question.
Yes.
Does this theater have assigned seating?
So it does, and I understand that. However, the idea of getting in line for Star Wars was never about the seating.
Of course it was.
It was always about the atmosphere. It was a nerd prom.
The Star Wars opening day.
You remember the attempt to see the film? Absolute. We've told this story many times.
The two things go hand in hand. You have to stand in line so you make it a party, but you don't have to stand in line anymore. So why would you want to be around those people?
So you would not want to be around those people. But the type of people who go to first screening of first Star Wars on opening night are not you, right? They're people who are, this is the thing for them.
But this is
part of their identity. And then when I came out, the theater was very busy. You know, a lot of people went around. But there were no fan. And so I came out of the theater and there were three guys in these awesome Star Wars costumes. One guy is Vader, one guy is Luke, one guy is a stormtrooper. These costumes were fantastic. But there were only three of them. This is the type of thing that every other Star Wars opening night for my entire life, it has been a thing. It's like a
event.
Carnival.
It's an event. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just think it's not an event anymore. I think they have killed it as a cultural thing.
The plan was to make $1 gazillion every year. We're going to put a movie every year and everyone's going to come see it. They killed it.
What I'm saying is I believe that Star Wars is in the death spiral as a piece of cultural intellectual property.
Well, I think that we've discussed this before, but the real problem is that the Star Wars universe is very shallow. It is, especially if you're going to junk all of the expanded universe stuff and all that. But the simple fact of the matter is that people actually only really care about the Skywalkers. They care about the soap opera aspect of it. And when you try and move away from that, I think you lose. But also, I just disagree with your framing of this. I think that the thing that has killed the communal aspect of it is not the relative quality of these movies, though they, I think, have been low compared to. I wouldn't say they're that much. They're not lower than none of these movies are worse than Attack of the Clones, which is legitimately a terrible film.
No, Last Jedi is worse than Attack of the Clones.
Attack of the Clones is a terrible
movie.
This
is like saying what is the difference between -269 degrees and -270 degrees. Okay. There's no functional difference.
But what has changed the communal aspect of it is just how we buy movie tickets. If you don't have to stand in line, people don't want to stand in line. If you have to stand in line, then you make it a social event. But now the normies can just go out and get the ticket at 5 p.m. like anybody else. So you don't have to stand in line to get that first thing. And if you don't have to do that, why would you?
Because, as a person who is a normie, you don't understand us, Sonny.
Yeah. Fair enough. That's fair.
That's why.
All right. We'll talk more Star Wars.
Look at that. Next week's going to be something. We're actually talking about a movie, the movie that came in fourth place, Richard Jewell. Sonny, do you want to give a big boy review of it? What did you think? You know Clint Eastwood. You met Clint Eastwood.
Yeah. Richard Jewell is the story of Richard Jewell. Richard Jewell, of course, was the hero of the Atlanta Olympics bombing. He spotted the nail bomb under a bench before it went off and saved a bunch of lives by getting people away from it. And for his troubles, he was destroyed by the media, by the government. He was made the primary suspect, or at least the primary person of interest in the investigation, and embarrassed nationally. I mean, the movie doesn't even do this, I don't think, but remember they found his porn stash?
I don't remember that.
I'm pretty sure that that's
vaguely,
a thing that I'm pretty sure
I mean,
that's a
I assume
thing
they
that
had
happened.
To have. They yeah. found everything. Right?
I'm pretty sure that's a thing that happened. Maybe I'm just making it up and I'm like, but the
I
the,
can see that
and that was of course in the news and you know is horribly embarrassing, blah blah. Richard Jewell is a fascinating film on a number of levels. So Clint Eastwood has been in this kind of American hero cycle where he made American Sniper,
Gran Torino,
Sully, American Sniper.
Come Torino. On,
that was good.
American
was
Sniper, good. Sully,
a hero among the Hmong. Yes.
the 1517 to Paris.
Yes.
And now this movie, Richard Jewell. And again, the kind of unifying aspect of all this is like the idea of American heroes, right? And they're all interesting in their own ways. And I think the ones until now have not quite worked because they've all had to manufacture drama. Like American Sniper has that weird dueling snipers subplot that like is totally unnecessary and kind of detracts from the idea of this great soldier and this great hero who is also like a mess, who is also kind of suffering from PTSD in a more minor way than like in a more minor way than you often see portrayed in this sort of thing. You know, it's about the strain on the family and all that. And then the ridiculous Sully NTSB subplot that made no... I can't remember if we discussed Sully on the show. But
no, I think that was before our time or no?
No. There was a terrible... There was this ridiculous subplot where Sully was hauled before the NTSB
in the movie. The villains.
Yeah, and they're like, you could have done better things to not crash this airplane in the river. And totally invented and nonsense. And the 1517 to Paris is interesting because it does have a conflict at the core of it, but the conflict is like 2 minutes long. So the rest of the film is kind of a travelogue. It's almost like a Terrence Malick movie in a weird way. It's a lot of like shots of people
the challenge of that movie was, of course, because they used
the real guys, which was interesting. But like, again, it's interesting. Richard Jewell doesn't need to manufacture any drama because Richard Jewell has obvious villains. Richard Jewell has obvious villains in the media and the government and the way that they work together to destroy him. And what is most interesting about this film, just from a kind of ideological or storytelling perspective, is that throughout the film, Richard Jewell is portrayed as a person who has absolute faith in authority. He worships authority. He is worshipful of authority. He wants to be a cop. He loves the police. He, you know, whenever he's talking to the FBI, he's like, I'm a fellow law enforcement agent, you know, even though he's a rent-a-cop. He does whatever the cops ask him to do. The FBI agents who are trying to string him up, he does everything they want because he thinks, you know, because he is innocent, the government will see that and then they will clear his name and everything will be fine. And the movie is very much about the way that worshipfulness is used against him repeatedly by the people he trusts, by the people who he thinks should be looking out for him. It is like weirdly subversive in its own way. It's a deeply libertarian film. A friend of mine, Peter Suderman, wrote a review in which he said that this is the if Hollywood was of the right instead of the left as it is, this is what every Hollywood movie would look like. The like kind of natural suppositions about the dangers of the media industrial complex and the dangers of trusting the government and blah blah blah. And I think there's something to that. The assumptions in the film are so kind of deeply embedded in it that it's like not partisan. It's just ideological, in a very real way. Anyway, I liked the movie a lot. I thought the lead guy Hauser is Paul Walter Hauser is fantastic as Richard Jewell. Yeah. Sam Rockwell is great as the lawyer. And I actually really liked. I know this has been a point of controversy, but I really enjoyed Olivia Wilde's portrayal of the reporter, especially her introduction where she comes. She like bounces into the newsroom like a swaggering like a football player, and she's like, I'm going to get a boob job so I can go on TV. And then like the copy desk is like giving her nasty looks and she's like, screw you old biddies, I'm out. And like flips him the double bird and walks out. I was like, this is the greatest introduction of any character I've ever seen.
It was the whole sort of sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. My crime stories push your boring stories off the, you know.
I'm sorry. I'm so good at my job.
I don't know. I saw that. I was like, wow, that is a definite type of journalist. I mean, you know, it's just a definite type. I mean, and I was like, yep. I mean, I thought she nailed it. I liked that, and I did like Paul Walter Hauser. I mean, his portrayal of Richard Jewell, I mean, obviously we know him from the media, but he does come across as also, I mean, yes, he respects authority, but he also is a man-child. you know?
Yeah, right. No, he's a stupid person. In this film, he is portrayed. In this film, he is portrayed as a dullard, basically, like a person who,
there's a certain type.
Again, who is worshipful of authority, who thinks he should have authority, and is clearly like not suited for it.
And in his part time, in his spare time, he goes to the arcade and plays a lot of video games.
Turkey shoot.
Did you? I know. Did that you was love great. That? I do. Those were all real. I'm looking there, and I said, "Yep, I know these games." And I thought that's good. But you know what? He spends a little too much time on video games. Speaking of which, if you're a parent and you know that kids are tough negotiators when it comes to screen time, and if your kids hear 5 more hours when you say 5 more minutes, you could use an ally. Circle is the award-winning way to manage your family's online time across all their connected devices, inside and outside your home. With Circle, parents can filter what content is allowed, set limits for screen time, monitor history and usage, and even reward kids for good behavior. Just plug Circle Home Plus into your router, download the app, and you can keep track across every connected device from laptops, phones, and tablets to smart TVs, streaming devices, and video game consoles, all from one place. And Circle has been getting rave reviews from the Chicago Tribune, People, the Wall Street Journal, USA Today, and many more. You do anything for your kids. Do something easy that'll keep your family on the right path and get Circle. Right now, our listeners get a limited time offer of $30 off of a Circle Home Plus when you visit meetcircle.com/subbeacon and enter subbeacon at checkout. Get $30 off when you visit meetcircle.com/subbeacon and enter subbeacon at checkout. That's meetcircle.com/subbeacon and enter subbeacon to save $30. JVL.
Thank God you made it through that.
Yeah, you were struggling there at the end.
Man,
you okay?
It is way too early.
Do you need some water? Yeah, do you need some? Take a. Do you want me to go get you another one?
Okay, I'm good. Go ahead. Yeah. What did you think, JV? Sonny liked it. I loved. Sonny liked it a lot. I loved it. I thought it was very affecting. What did you think?
I mean, qua movie, I thought it was a little bit slow and a little bit flabby.
You could definitely be about 15 minutes tighter.
Yeah. I mean, Paul Walter Hauser's physical transformation for this role is really something. Because the guy looks like Matthew McConaughey in real life.
Right.
And he... I'm joshing on him. I thought he did a very, very nice job. Especially for a guy who's a comedian.
Yeah, that's right.
He pulled way back inside, and he does a lot with the way he sort of looks around at people and with his eyes. Olivia Wilde, you know, so she has never been my thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I have ever liked her work especially. I don't dislike her work, but never. She's great. Just great here.
Me too. I was surprised that she's, I felt the same way. It really worked for me.
Yeah. But Sam Rockwell owns the movie. And I texted this to you guys last night. So Sam Rockwell has been a brilliant character actor for 20 years. But I get the feeling between this and Jojo Rabbit that he is on the cusp of being a truly great leading man and is just ready to carry whole movies by himself. Would you disagree?
He has been a leading man.
Other than Moon? What has he been a leading man? I just feel like, you know, he's been in working for literally since like 1985. Yeah. And he is almost always a gifted character in the background. I'm just ready to see starring Sam Rockwell. Let's start giving him, because he is so good here.
I mean, he was in The Best of Enemies earlier this year. He's like essentially a co-lead in that. He was in he had that whole FX show, the Fosse Verdon show.
Yeah, well, this is what I'm saying. We are ready. He is now ready to be elite in the same way that like Jude Law jumped from being a character actor to a great leading man.
Yeah.
I'm ready for the Sam Rockwell era to begin. I don't know.
He was on, I think it was Jimmy Kimmel Live. And
now, to be fair, he has won an Oscar.
Yeah.
He won for Three Billboards. Outside
Three Billboards, I was going to say, outside of Ebbing. So he was on Jimmy Kimmel, and Rockwell was saying that there's that scene where they're looking, they're in the bedroom and they lay, he, you know, Richard Jewell has to lay out all his guns and they're looking at the guns, but so they're in between takes. And then, and so Paul Walter Hauser and Sam Rockwell just standing there looking at the guns laid out, and Clint walks by and he comes in and he picks up the 44 and he's like, 44 Magnum, it's the most powerful handgun in the world. It'll take a guy's head right off. And then he leaves. And then Rockwell said, he turns to Paul and he's like, that just happened. It was a great story. I liked it. I was concerned about duration because
it's
long. It's 2 hours, 18. It was long. It was,
yeah.
But, well, maybe part of the factor is it was a recovery day for me because the night before was the Christmas party. So, and I went with my in-laws. And so the three of us go in. And
did you detox while you were?
I just
sweated out all the gym.
I lounged out and I allowed myself to just get absorbed by the movie. So I didn't have a feeling of I want to get out of here or what time is it. And I often do that even with short movies if they're not good. But this one, I just let myself get taken in by it, and I really enjoyed it. And then at some point, I realized, oh wow, I think we're almost nearing the end part, but. I really liked it.
It's a great period piece.
Oh, yeah, the 90s?
It captures the mid-90s. Yeah.
The crane
so
shot.
Well.
The crane shot of the Macarena.
Yeah.
Yes. It's such a silly but also great little moment.
Yeah, absolutely. The music was great.
Can I ask you guys about a choice that Eastwood made that I was very interested in? So the first Today Show interview, which is Richard Jewell and Katie Couric.
And that's the real one, right?
He chose to. So that scene is shot. You are standing in the room looking at the television. Mm-hmm. And so you see on the television the actual interview with actual Richard Jewell. And I believe probably Paul Walter Hauser's voice.
Oh. I don't know.
It was hard for me to tell because they really do look alike.
But the second Today Show.
I know what you're going to say.
Is done not through a TV, but as if you're standing on set watching them.
Uh-huh.
And in that, we get Sam Rockwell and a guy playing Brian Gumbel.
Right, fake Brian Gumbel.
I found that very, very interesting, just as a directorial choice.
Yeah, I mean, Brian Gumbel is around.
Like the real, they're well, real when you're seeing them on television through that medium, yeah. But then when you're actually with them in the flesh, then we're seeing the fake movie version.
Well, I mean, I'm sure there's just a technical issue here that you want to shoot it that way, you have to show the real people. You can't like superimpose. Whatever.
Sure.
But the choice is interesting too, though, because if we're talking about the artistic choice, he is seeing himself on TV be vilified and manipulated and all that. Later in the film, this is when he's still seeing himself as the hero.
Correct.
And it's an interesting choice. It's a choice. I mean, it's kind of like what Tarantino did with Margot Robbie and Sharon Tate.
Yep. Have the real
right.
Margot.
So you in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, there's a extended sequence where Margot Robbie watches a Sharon Tate film as Sharon Tate. So like she is watching the film, and the film that is being shown on the screen is the real Sharon Tate. It's not superimposed Margot Robbie in there. And it's an interesting directorial choice because he doesn't have to do it. And you know he doesn't have to do it because earlier in the film, he superimposed Leo into an episode of FBI.
And into
into The Great Escape, but that was imagined.
Yeah,
the point is he doesn't have to do that. He could superimpose Margot Robbie in if he wanted to, but he chooses not to because he wants us to see the real Sharon Tate do her thing. And I think you get a similar affect here. Mm-hmm. It's not done as showily because it's Clint Eastwood and it's not Quentin Tarantino. But I think it's making the same point.
And he's so understated, both with the score and just in general. I had a question, but you were going to say something, JV.
I'm going to ask your question. Mine is a larger discussion.
Okay. So kind of this one is too. Question, is this movie being punished because of everyone saying the adjective that people are throwing out there for the movie is Trumpian, they say? Is it being punished because they said, how dare you... You know, the Kathy Scruggs controversy suggests that she slept with the source, and you know, we don't know that, and B, you know, I mean, the FBI, it's a composite character, you know, and I don't know. What do you think? It's not doing well.
I mean, I have very deep thoughts about this, but mm-hmm. Sonny, you should go first.
What, I'm sorry, what was the question?
Is it Trumpian? Is our audience is punishing yeah. this because this is a cipher for Trump?
You know, somebody, Dave Weigel made a very interesting point on Twitter that it exists in a weird Twilight Zone right now where the movie has been vilified by anti-Trump people a great deal on social media, but Fox News has not picked it up as a, like, cause. Own the libs cause. So it's not getting the, like, hope for boost, I think, that you know, Warner was
Twilight,
hoping for.
Yeah.
Do I think this hurt the movie? I don't know. I mean, look, the simple fact of the matter is that Clint Eastwood's non-Clint Eastwood starring movies tend to open lower and do less well. I mean, he made a movie with Leonardo DiCaprio a few years back, the J. Edgar Hoover movie.
All right.
And that movie, I think, grossed $33 million domestic, which I think is Leo's lowest
mm-hmm.
box office in the last, I don't know, probably 10 years. So I think you know, I've seen a lot of people saying, like, oh, this is Clint Eastwood's lowest opening, you know, in 40 mm-hmm. years, blah, blah.
Right.
And yeah, okay, I kind of see that. But it's also a movie with no box office stars, and it's about a subject that I don't think people... I don't think
it's not historical enough. It's, yeah. it's actually too close to us.
It's
historically.
Like it's too close to us yeah. historically, but it's also too personal and, like, kind of small. So do I think that it has been hurt a little bit by this controversy? I think it has been hurt a little bit by this controversy. That said, I think the controversy is dumb. I think, like, I think it is JBL, I think, is going to talk a little bit more about this, but the press turning this into a story
right.
about how the press is treated unfairly
right.
is, like, the most, it's like the reason why everybody hates the press.
Right. I mean, I just thought after reading that and after reading, like, Owen Gleiberman's column about the two lies of Richard Jewell, one of his Kathy Scruggs and the other one is the attack on the press because they're just doing their job. And then you watch the movie, I'm like, Clint played it the way, you know, it was. He just laid it out there, you know? So anyway, JVL.
So I know a lot about this subject. I remember reading the original Vanity Fair article when it first came out, The Ballad of Richard Jewell. My one thematic complaint about the film version of this is that I think it goes slightly too hard on the FBI and much too soft on Kathy Scruggs.
Mm. You think the movie lets her off easy?
I think it lets her off the hook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, they show her being remorseful in the movie.
Right. They show her being remorseful, and there is some indication that she was remorseful, but not for a while. I'll get to Kathy Scruggs in a minute. First of all, I have a great deal of sympathy for the FBI. So the FBI's here are the FBI's sins in relation to the Richard Jewell case. They pushed to the very limits of what is ethical in terms of trying to elicit comment from a witness or a person of interest in their treatment of Richard Jewell. The two characters played by John Hamm and the other fellow in this movie are composites, but they hew very, very closely to what happened. The sort of bring him in under false pretenses, trying to trick him into signing away his rights and be Mirandized without realizing he was actually being Mirandized as a... All of this actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know that it was the FBI who leaked to the press, but the belief is that it was the FBI. And that is the biggest sin of all of this, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, part of the idea of police powers of the government is you have to let them off the leash to go and investigate people, understanding that they're not going to be right all the time. They're not going to immediately find the guy the very first time out the gate. And so the trade-off for this is they've got to do it quietly so you don't ruin people's lives mm-hmm. in the course of investigating crimes. And if it was, in fact, the FBI, but whoever, it was somebody in law enforcement who leaked this out. And that is a tremendous problem, like a really, really bad and damaging thing to have happened. Here's where I have a great deal of sympathy for the FBI. So this was the first bombing, the first of four bombings conducted by Eric Rudolph. It was a literally impossible case to solve. At the time that it happened, with the information available, there is no possible way that they could ever have come to the conclusion that Eric Rudolph might be a suspect.
Mm-hmm.
He was just a non-factor, right? It would be years yeah. until they could
nobody knew who he was.
Nobody knew who he was, and
like
he had
lived
no
off
MO.
The grid,
he lived off the
yeah.
grid. There was no
I mean,
other
he used
bombings
like,
to compare
I mean, he just
the
used
work
nails
to.
And
right.
yeah.
And so if you're the FBI trying to figure this out, we could say like, oh, they had blinders on. But the fact of the world in which they were living in meant that even if they had no blinders on, there was nobody else to consider.
Right.
The only possible person to look at was Richard Jewell. And so you can understand why they did. And also, Richard Jewell is a weird guy.
And I think the movie actually gets into that. Yes. I think the movie actually does a fairly good job of complicating the story by just being like, Richard Jewell, kind of weird, a little bit weird. Right.
Yes,
not wannabe cop.
And you see this whenever we've had now three of these situations: the Chandra Levy, Gary Condit thing, and the Anthrax letters with Stephen Hatfill.
That's right.
And in each of those cases, Hatfill, Richard Jewell, and Gary Condit, all super weird guys.
Mm-hmm.
Super duper weird. It isn't the case of like, hey, they just looked at this guy over here and he's just a normal Joe Schmo. Like, you know,
no weird.
Guy's right. A little weird, right? I have some sympathy for the FBI in that, right? Who else are they supposed to look at? If you put yourselves in their mind, you have two choices. You can either throw up your hands and say, well, we just don't know, in a high-profile case, the Olympics, or you can, as aggressively as possible, pursue the guy. The complaints then become you can't ruin the guy's life by talking about it with the media.
Right.
Right.
Right. Which brings us to the real enemy, which is the media.
The mainstream press. So
Kathy Scruggs, this is a case study that is now taught in journalism school about how to not be an ethical reporter.
Mm-hmm.
And the extent to which she goes and hides behind, I'm just reporting accurate facts, as if that is the whole job of the media, absolutely excuses the extent to which accurate facts can confuse and distract from the truth. Here are some accurate facts. Kathy Scruggs was widely disliked by her colleagues. She was exactly as portrayed by all accounts in this movie, dismissive, glory-seeking, trying to get murders onto the front page as if that's a public good. It's not. She was pushing the if it bleeds, it leads destruction of journalism.
Right.
Dressing wildly inappropriately and flirting with cops. There's a big to-do about how she never slept with a source in exchange for information. Nobody is denying that she ever slept with sources.
Here's what's interesting about this argument, right? Is that the way in the universe of the film, the way it is portrayed, here's what I saw. I saw an attractive woman flirting with an attractive man while people were dancing around them.
Yep.
And then 5 minutes later, I see those same two getting together at a bar. I see him frustrated and drunk because he has a guy who wants to pin this on. I see a reporter looking for a story. I see two people who obviously already had chemistry kind of flirting with each other. And then I see him give her the information that he wants out there anyway and that she wants to receive. And then I see them leave the bar. I see them. This was not an example of a reporter trading sex for stories. I think they wanted to have sex anyway, is my point here.
So
this is like, but this is, and this gets
understood.
To the, yeah.
But here the again, a bunch of accurate facts, right? And she dies of an overdose of pills.
Yeah.
At a young age, and she got spectacularly wrong the most important story of her career. So if I report all those facts to you, could you draw inferences about like, hey, maybe she slept, maybe she did sleep with sources along the way, maybe she had a pill problem while she was. Nobody is alleging these things, but hey, I have just reported accurate facts for you. The hell with what the truth is. And again, the fact that this is not some unbelievably complicated case where the exonerating evidence was something nobody figured out. Everybody knew within 5 seconds. We know where the payphone came from. We know where the bomb went. Just pace it off into the time, right? And the extent to which when law enforcement leaks, when the government leaks against the government, okay, that's one thing. When the government leaks against a private citizen, that's very different. Mm-hmm. And for a reporter to accept as news value the government making a case against a private citizen without making any minimal effort to see, well, I don't know, is this plausible? And to just report out like, hey, look, see, they got this guy. That's really bad.
Yeah.
And the attempt to cover up the Kathy Scruggs tracks here by saying, oh, but look how unfair the movie is to her. By saying,
her roommate said.
Yeah. You know what? This is like having a surgeon who operates well for 10 years and is pretty successful, but everybody knows has a drinking problem. And then one day he's supposed to amputate a guy's arm, but instead he cuts off a leg and the patient dies. And then afterwards everyone says, well, but look at those 10 years. He, you know, and there's no evidence that he was drunk that day when he was operating. Right. Like, no, this is a reckless journalist who really screwed up and should in fact have lost their license for it, or whatever the journalism version of his license. I think the movie is actually, if anything, way too kind to her.
And again, I think there is something to be said for the press turning this movie and the discussion about this movie into an argument over the unfair treatment of the press.
Yeah, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution petitioning Warner Bros. Instead of just taking their lumps and saying, "Yep,
hiring Marty Singer, the enemy of the press, to go after Warner Brothers on this." I like everything about this angers me. And is just further proof that the public is right to hate the media in a very real way. I'm so annoyed by this.
You know, I hear that respecting intellectual property is a thing that is deeply important to the media, because the media requires the rights of intellectual property to function well in order for it to survive, right? And my favorite anecdote in all of this Atlanta Journal-Constitution cracking back against Warner Brothers was a bunch of AJC staffers saying that they worked out an arrangement with a local theater owner to buy tickets for a different movie, but then be allowed to go in and see Richard Jewell because they wanted to pay their fair share, but they didn't want to put any money in Clint Eastwood's pockets.
I hate him so much.
You people, America deserves good media, but you people deserve to have your industry destroyed. Mm-hmm.
They deserve it. Bellarmedia.com
/ Subbeacon.
Coupon code Subbeacon, two words. I'm actually furious about it.
I think it's the tone deafness with which the media operates and the cocoon in which it separates itself from like any real world discussion or application of what they do drives me crazy.
And then, I mean, this is a thing that, like, I've dealt with in my own career. Like, I stumbled upon a thing that would have been a really big story back circa 1998, circa impeachment. And it would have ruined the subject of this. It would have ruined their lives for me to have reported it. And I had it dead to rights. And the truth is, I decided there just wasn't enough news value in it. And you couldn't
also,
do it.
She told me she was 18.
Poor pig.
So this is not a, it's not like this was some impossible choice where she was weighing the public good and right to know against it. It was just glory seeking, and this woman is a villain.
Thank you. That was like one of the most informative episodes we've had in a while. That was really informative. Thank you, JVL. It's a sad movie because, of course, and you know, you see him having the angina or whatever and his chest, and then eventually, of course, he dies. I mean, he lived long enough to see him
Eric
be recognized.
Rudolph. Yeah, he lived long enough for Eric Rudolph to be caught.
Oh, yeah, Eric Rudolph. But Richard Jewell, I was going to say, and be awarded, I think, like citizen of like Georgia or something.
But he didn't make it. So he filed five libel suits.
Yeah, that's right.
Four of them settled.
Except for
the AJC, which was vindicated very narrowly and only on appeal.
Mm-hmm. And after he died.
And after he died. Yeah. But he didn't make out. I mean, his total take from the libel suits was under $1 million in settlements.
Forever.
Almost all of which went to legal fees and taxes. So it is not like he walked away. Undisputably would have been better off had this never happened to him
at the end of the day. I also think that if he were alive today, he'd probably be shopping at swagright.com. JVL, what's going on here?
You know, that is entirely true. If you're going to lean right, then swag right. At swagright.com, get your holiday swag for those you love and like this year. From Trump t-shirts, Swalwell whoopee cushions, and the Pocahontas pillow, to fake news gear and more. And now, Swagright has just released its membership club subscription, featuring a monthly wearable gift, drinkable mug, and many surprise gifts. All gifts are relevant to the news of the day. $24.99 a month, or sign up for your annual club membership for the value of $19.99 a month. And once you sign up, you'll immediately get your President Trump coloring book, his Promise Keeper shirt, and the Washington Free Beacon Truth Monkey, Go to swagrite.com now and check it all out.
Thank you, JVL. You reading that ad is like me reading an ad for oldersingles.com. It's just weird. Okay. We got a lot of shout-outs here going on. And actually, and a query. I'll start with the query, JVL. Listener John Boyer wants to know, JVL, if you can recommend a book on pro wrestling.
Yes. David Shoemaker's Life and Death in the Squared Circle.
Thank you.
There.
Next. A big shout-out to listener Madeline. No last name. She sends us 3 bottles. Mine is already home. It's not finished. It's in my cellar.
Your wine cave?
My wine cave. Very good. It's turned into that because of all the mold. 3 bottles of Andrew Will Cabernet Sauvignon 2014, which tells me that you could drink it now and it's just right. And she sends this note. So I'll read the note and it says, "Guys, keep doing what you do."
Hold
on. There's something in my eye.
Never stop.
I can't even begin to tell you how much listening to Vic's latest adventures in gout, Sonny's box office mojo adversity, and JVL's fetish for dehydrated powder form protein makes my week. You guys are the best. The gift is meant to be shared with your sainted spouses. They're really the true heroes here. Cheers, Madeline.
Thank you,
and
Madeline.
That is true. That is all accurate and true. And the second, and you have something here, JVL.
Yeah,
all
I right, got our Tomabella, the official emissary of Weekly Substandard Expanded Universe, has sent us Whistle Pig. I don't know what that is.
That's a really good one.
Is that very, very good? Is it a rye? Is it a?
I sent one to for Mike Warren's wedding. I think I got him a bottle. This is a 10-year.
Is that good?
Whistle Pig straight rye whiskey.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
I think we should let Vic have the whole bottle.
Man, let's not do that.
I have it right now. Okay.
Thanks, guys. We love you.
Very, very kind. Okay.
You should give it. You know what?
I want to say thank you one more time to everybody in the Sub-Beacon universe who signed up for Rebeller Media over this 2-day launch period. It meant a lot to me. It really did. I was touched.
You know, I was going to say that
Sonny, maybe you can start eating now.
Listeners who want to give presents to each other might go to rebellermedia.com and use the promo code SUBBEACON. Yeah. 2 words, 15%
off.
Okay, that's all the time. This is a long one.
Yeah,
and it's coming out on a Friday. That's all the time we're giving to this episode. Questions, comments, complaints, compliments. Tweet us at Sonny Bunch, at Victorino Mattis.
At JV Last. Let's bring it back.
Come on.
I was on Twitter this week for you, Sonny.
You have many followers. For not being on Twitter, you have many followers. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. Just type in Sub-Beacon at a podcast. We're there. Leave a review. Tell your friends. Until next time. I do have a...
Yeah?
Yeah, okay.
Tell me.
One other shout out to longtime listener Robert Little.
I know Robert Little.
He kindly sent us a bottle of Red Bush. Bushmills Red Bush, but it's in my office. And I love that. Anyway, thank you to Robert for that bottle. I don't know why they call it that. I mean, it's not really red. It's more like a dark brown. It smells good.
I'm sure it's fine.
I said to the bartender,
I'm sure it's fine.
Black Bush? Do you have Black Bush or Red Bush?
I'm sure it's fine.
Or no Bush.
Stop. I'm sure it's fine.